Greetings and welcome to Complexity Talk Radio, Complexity Live with your host, Dr. Donna Maria Colbreth. You may call us to share your thoughts, to pose a question, or to give a general comment by dialing 914-338-1308. And now, Dr. Colbreth.
Greetings, everyone, and welcome to Complexity Talk Radio, Complexity Live. I'm your host, Dr. Donna Maria Colbreth, and I'm coming to you live. Greetings, everyone. It has been, 2 weeks since we've held a show. I'm glad to be back. I have been very, very busy and ready to get this show going tonight. It's going to be an exciting show. I'm going to talk about tonight psychic prisons in the workplace. And the reason why I chose this topic is because with conversations with colleagues, friends, consulting, so many people deal with so much drama and nonsense in the work environment. And you guys know me. I am no nonsense. Dr. C is zero tolerance for that. And I think this show is going to be exciting and interesting. Before I even get into the show, let me just tell you the good news. As I shared with you a couple of weeks ago, I was nominated as a Dunkin' Donuts Community Hero for 2015, and today they, you know, gave out the official press release, and I'm excited about that. And they are giving a $500 reward award, and you get free coffee for a week for a year, which is going to be excellent for me. But what I'm going to do with the award money is that I'm going to establish a scholarship fund. Well, I'm not going to do, let me correct myself. Through the National Girls and Women of Color Council, I'm going to establish a scholarship fund. I'm going to donate that money to the scholarship fund at one of our colleges here in Maryland. And as you guys know, the National Girls and Women of Color Council is exactly, you know, what the scholarship fund will be established in their name through the school for girls and women of color attending the institution. So I'm excited to do that. I've been having a really busy, great summer. It's such good stuff that's been going on. I need to put it in a book. At the end of the day, let me just make this announcement also, everyone. As you guys know, we had the call for submissions open for the National Girls and Women of Color Council in collaboration with I Am Beautiful and the Journal of Colorism Studies. And we extended the call for submissions until August 30th, and we received so many submissions. My editorial review board is probably going to shoot me because they're getting overburdened with so many submissions to review, but I am excited. And to all of those who submitted, who gave us submissions for the journal, I am so grateful and thankful. This is indeed going to be a phenomenal journal. We have great articles. We have essays. We have reviews. I'm just, how can I say it? I'm so excited. I'm overjoyed. And I think you guys are going to love it. So the journal is actually scheduled to come out, to be published, rather, at the end of November, December. And I'm praying we make the deadline because I pushed the date back so far. But you know me, where there's a will, there's a way. So I'm working hard to get that, this second issue of Volume 1 out by, at minimum, the end of this year. It will not go past that date. I am excited because the Journal of Colorism Studies has now not only been included in the ProQuest database at libraries. EBSCO recently picked us up. They sent us an email that we were nominated. They were excited for us to join them. So now the Journal of Colorism Studies is also in EBSCO databases, which is worldwide. And we are very excited about that and thrilled and honored. The journal is growing. We have just added in, I think, about 7 or 8 or 9 new review board members. And I'm so excited about our new review board members joining us. We are expanding. We are growing. I am excited. With regard to the nominations for Extraordinary Girls and Women of Color, I'm still going to accept them up until probably a couple of more weeks. This is just awesome, guys. exciting time. It's a very exciting time for the Journal of Colorism Studies and the National Girls and Women of Color Council. And by the way, because I did not mention this, the Dunkin' Donuts Community Hero Award for 2015 is because of what I'm doing with the National Girls and Women of Color Council. So thank you, Dunkin' Donuts. I'm looking forward to the ceremony in October and my coffee, of course, which I cannot live without. So let's get into what our topic tonight, psychic prisons in the workplace. I'm quite sure everybody's been through this, where you deal with drama in the work environment. You deal with the crabs in the barrel mentality. You know, what about being thrown under the bus? How many of you have ever actually been thrown under the bus in the work environment? I can tell you years ago, when I was younger, I was thrown under the bus several times. So what I'm going to do tonight, I'm going to talk about psychic prisons and how psychic prisons are really problems and issues in the workplace, from bullying to groupthink to the office politics to crabs in the barrel to pettiness and envy. I'm going to talk about the 20-70-10 rule. Pretty good stuff. So let's start off with this. A couple of years ago, I gave a presentation at Bowie State University, and it was titled Plato's Cave in the Workplace, Organizations of Psychic Prisons. And at the time that I gave this presentation, what I actually did, because I fell in love with a book, the name of the book is titled Images of Organization by Gareth Morgan. It was one of the books I used when I was going to my PhD program, and fell in love with his work, fell in love with his psychic prison metaphor and how he applied it to organizational issues. So for those of you who are not really familiar with Socrates and the Republic and Plato's Cave, I'm going to give you a brief overview about the allegory of the cave. And as I go through that, you'll be able to see how I'm going to relate it back to the workplace. Because here's the bottom line, gang. All of us, when we get up every morning, we get a shower, we get dressed, we fix ourselves up, we go to work. You know, we're going there because, number one, we want to work. We are interested in now, of course, bringing home a good little paycheck. But I think we all have a right to expect to go to work and work in an environment that's free from drama, the nonsense, all the ridiculous nonsense that you have to go through sometimes. And it's interesting because a lot of the times when we're in the work environment, and this is what I find to be so amazing, a lot of people don't realize they put up with so much crap. And that's what it is, guys. I call it crap and nonsense. Dealing with other people's drama, which I like to label as OPBS, and you know what that stands for. So at the end of the day, when all is said and done, I know so many people who leave work every day, go home miserable as the day is long, and they're just, you know, worn out, tired, they're frustrated, they hate going to work. They're dealing with some individual on the job who's making their life a living hell. But sometimes, and some of the people I've coached and counseled, especially during consulting, a lot of the times, you know what the people have told, employees have told me, when I said to them, well, you're at this point, and perhaps it's time for you to move on. And a lot of them have said to me they fear moving on because they've been at that organization or business for so long that they believe that if they try and move on to go somewhere different, or somewhere new, that their skill sets may not meet what the new employer may be looking for. So what do? They stay. They put up with the drama. They put up with the chaos and the pandemonium, the negativity. And what happens is that sometimes people become bitter. They become bitter. They're not happy. And that starts to affect their work ethic, their work style, their performance. Next thing you know, they're getting a negative performance evaluation. The negative performance evaluation starts to spiral, the process of spiraling downward with the nonsense. So what happens is that when we're looking at the psychic prison issues in the work environment, let me begin with Plato's Cave. So let me go. This is my favorite. I love this. I apply it to so many different things. Now, in Plato's allegory of the cave, Socrates addressed the relations among appearance. And so remember this. This is really important for you guys to remember this. The reality among appearance, reality, and knowledge. He goes on to describe an underground cave with the mouth of the cave facing a fire. The people who live in the cave, the inhabitants, we'll call them the cave dwellers. They were all chained to a wall, and they could not move. Their hands, you know, the necks, their arms, their legs, they're chained to this wall. And their reality for all of those cave dwellers included the reflections that they saw on the wall, because there was a big fire burning on the other side. So the reality, they associated sounds and noises with the shadows that they saw on the wall, because remember the shadowy cave that they lived in. And the sounds that they heard always came, of course, from the upper world. But remember, they're in the underground in a cave, chained. Truth and reality for the cave dwellers rested in their shadowy world, because they really didn't have knowledge of any other existence. So let me stop right there and go back into the work environment. When we start seeing individuals, as I just noted earlier, in the work environment, they only know what they know from that particular viewpoint of the job that they're in, especially if they haven't gone through continuing education, if they're not going to professional development to enhance and keep their skills updated with professional associations or whatever. So remember, the knowledge, the cave dwellers didn't have knowledge of any other existence. When we start looking at psychic prisons in the work environment, those people, the individuals who get caught up in these psychic prisons or these traps that they set for themselves, they know nothing other than this. It's the same thing like when you're dealing with the petty employee in the workplace, the office bitch, as they call them, the gossip monger, the negative grapevine. They don't know any better, and a lot of it has to do with the organizational culture. The culture of the organization can sometimes be an issue, and sometimes it may not be an issue. So it really depends. Now, let's go back to our cave. If one of the cave dwellers escaped, was able to get loose and escape and venture into the upper world, that particular cave dweller would realize that the shadows were just reflections of a more complex reality, and that the knowledge and perceptions of the other cave dwellers was distorted and flawed. Now, let's stop there again and let's go look at the work environment. And let's just say with the work environment, you have a new employee who comes in who has all these bright ideas, they're vibrant, they're intelligent, they're smart, they've been out in the real world, so they know what it takes to keep things going and making the business grow and expand. They are able to come on board and bring in new ideas, new concepts. They represent change. They can, even what they call as change agents. But the problems they run into or they encounter is with the old employees who've been there for so long. We'll call them the cave dwellers. And sometimes their perceptions of reality can be distorted and flawed. Now, the interesting thing here is that after a period of time, you know, that escaped dweller, cave dweller, has now gone into this upper world, and he's experiencing everything for the first time. He's feeling sunlight on his face. He's seeing birds flying. He can actually understand when he hears the ocean roaring. He sees the waves hitting, people walking, the bright sun blinding his eyes. Now, it's a whole new world for this guy. And this new reality for him, this is his new reality now, it would lead him to actually pity the cave dwellers who were still chained into the wall. Now, if he ever tried to return to the cave to share his new knowledge with the cave dwellers, they would laugh and ridicule him. Because remember, they only know what they know. Their reality is their confinement in that cave. The fact that this guy has escaped and he's come back to say there's a whole wide world out there waiting to be explored, they wouldn't be able to accept that. Because the inhabitants of that cave, their existence in the cave is more meaningful to them than his new discovery. And this is something that Gareth Morgan noted. And it's interesting. So likewise, once the cave dweller experienced the upper world, he would never be able to live as a cave dweller again. You know, reality for the escaped dweller was his new discovery. Whereas reality for the dwellers of the cave rested in his shadowy existence. And what happened here is that his existence would actually lead the cave dwellers to tighten their grip on their familiar ways of seeing you know, their reality of experiencing it. Now, it's really interesting because life for those cave dwellers actually represents appearances, and the journey to the upper world represents knowledge. And this is according to Olson and Herman. They wrote that back in 98. And what happens is that we see people get trapped every day by illusions. Therefore, their view of reality is often flawed, and it is limited. So when we start looking at the allegory of the cave, remember, we're looking at appearance, reality, and knowledge. When you look at the new employee in the work environment, and you compare that new employee to the older employees, we can kind of see the relationship there with the cave dweller who went up to the upper world and ventured out and had all these exciting new experiences, and the old cave dwellers who've never been out there. So when the new employee comes into the workforce and he's saying to the older employees, I don't mean age-wise, I mean who've been there, employed a longer period of time, that this is an easier process. This is a change that's going to help put this company on the map. These are the areas we need to grow in and we need to focus in on. Remember, it goes back to everybody and how they see appearances for them, reality, and knowledge. And sometimes what happens when we start talking about psychic prisons is that humans begin to create webs and traps for themselves. They get caught up in favorite ways of thinking. And for someone to come along and say, hey, there's a better way of doing what you're doing, streamline it, make it easier, they can't embrace it. So organizations in and of themselves and members of those organizations can become trapped by constructions of reality. They don't want to see it. They can't embrace it. They can't allow themselves to envision it. So organizations become trapped by favorite ways of thinking, which is interesting to note because when that happens, this is what you hear. You hear employees saying, this is the way we do it around here. It's always been done this way. No need to change the policy. No need to say change this process. No need to change this procedure because this is the way it's always been done, and we're not going to change it now. This actually happens. You know, I've heard employees say, this is the way it's been done for so long, and it's going to stay this way. We're not going to allow it to change. This is what you consider favorite ways of thinking. And those favorite ways of thinking can always lead to chaos and pandemonium in the workplace. And if someone comes in representing change, that change may be extremely difficult. As if we go back to the cave dwellers, change for them, you know, embracing what the escape dweller was explaining to them, how beautiful the upper world is, would be extremely difficult for them. They couldn't embrace it, couldn't accept it. And what happens is that when we start looking at these favorite ways of thinking, they actually become traps, the psychic prisons. And these traps confine and prevent change from taking place. Now, Icarus Paradox is all about a Greek mythology character. And this is interesting because it's really important to note this. He made wax wings, and he was so proud of them. And he soared really close to the sun, and the wings melted, and he plunged to his death. And so when we're looking at organizations, when we're looking at employees, we're looking at the psychic prisons in the workplace sometimes, organizations can get caught in vicious circles where their victories and their strengths can become weaknesses. And that's according to Miller. Because when we look at what happened with the wings, they created power. And that power led to his downfall because he didn't realize, you know, this is wax. Wax will melt in the heat. He soared close to the sun. Boom, and he went down. When we start going back and looking at employees in the work environment, sometimes you don't realize how the circle that you travel in, you don't understand how sometimes your victories, if you're not watching what you're doing, can lead to a weakness. It can be a downfall. It can cause, like I said, chaos and pandemonium to break out. And what happens is that ways of seeing can become ways of not seeing. And sometimes you can walk into an organization, you could be working there, and it could be really powerful vision. Somebody there can have like this super powerful vision. But sometimes those powerful visions can lead to blind spots. Those blind spots can include not realizing that an employee may be a pain in the neck who needs to go, who could be violent or dangerous, or workplace bully, or incompetent, or whatever the issue may be. Blind spots cause a lot of problems in the work environment. Oftentimes, when we see employees working together, and this is something, you know, it's interesting, you'll know this, is that employees get caught up in thinking the same way. You know, groupthink, favorite ways of thinking. They get together, and they actually believe one particular way of thinking is the good way, is the right way, and we're not going to change it. An example would be this. New employee on the job, they're the old employees who've been there 20, 25 years. The new employee represents the change that is needed for the organization to continue to grow, to sustain itself, to remain competitive, and to, of course, be prosperous. The older employees, and this is what's dangerous about groupthink, and this is what a lot of people fail to understand when we start looking at and talking about groupthink. What happens with the groupthink issue is, for example, you may have, let's say, a group of employees who are used to hanging together, they're buddies, they stick around with each other. And when the groupthink pops into the picture, you see sometimes people become cliques. You know, the group of people who stick together. And many organizational cliques are formed as a result of work groups, and others because it could be because of cultural or ethnic connections. It could be because of they've been there so long. And what we have to understand is that, as Morgan noted before, culture gives us our world. And it's important that we understand that. So when we start looking at this groupthink and how groupthink can be a problem, especially in the work environment, if, let's say, for example, Jane Doe is an employee. She and John Doe share similar beliefs and values. As a result of that, you know, their little group gets larger. More employees join because they all begin to think alike. And here's something, and you go back in history, if you look at the in the Kennedy administration when they had the Bay of the Pigs, Robert McNamara, in his, I think it's his autobiography, he noted how a lot of individuals in the president's cabinet at that time realized that their strategy to go in wasn't good. It was flawed. But rather than them speak up and talk about this being a problem or an issue, they were silent because of groupthink. And when you have groupthink, what happens is that everybody in the group, and there may be one individual who realizes that the thought processes and the focus of the group is wrong and flawed, rather than break the cohesiveness of that group, they'll go along with the groupthink, so that they won't seem like an outsider or they're breaking the cohesiveness or causing upset within the group. So the appearance and the reality and the knowledge can be flawed of the individuals in that group. But they don't want to break, you know, the bond there. Well, if I speak up and I talk about the fact that what John Doe or Jane Doe is doing is ridiculous and it's not fair and it's wrong, then the problem that we're going to have is that I'm no longer going to be considered a member of the group. I'm going to be considered a member of the out-group. And they don't want to go in that direction. So when we start talking about psychic prisons are traps. They are ways in which we confine ourselves. And once we get trapped in a psychic prison, it's very difficult to break free and get out of it. Why? Because we get caught into that favorite way of thinking. You're trapped in your mind. Get set in that mode, and you can't get out. Groupthink kicks in. So a psychic prison is basically, for all intents and purposes and understanding, a way of thinking that confines you from being able to see the distortion and the flawed issues in what you see as an appearance in reality and in knowledge. When we see the psychic prisons in the work environment, we all know about the office politics. The office politics game, I think it's the biggest waste of time. And I can tell you guys, I don't do office politics. I don't play them with people. I'm here to do my job, to do it extremely well, and earn a paycheck and go home and enjoy spending my money. I'm not here to do all this silly, petty crap. I can tell you stories, guys. It's just unbelievable. But I just want to do my job and go home. You know, you associate, you mix and mingle with the coworkers. But as far as the office politics crap and the bureaucratic games, I'm like, you save that for somebody else on a rainy day. I don't play that game. On top of that, you have what's called that negative grapevine, where you have individuals in the work environment who just keep hell going. And they get something and they gossip about it, and they can have it half-assed, half-wrong, and they take it and they run with it. The negative grapevine, what it actually does, it's part of that psychic prison. Because the individual who normally starts that grapevine prides himself in being able to keep that little cycle going, to keep the line, that little grapevine going with the employees. And it's always about negativity. It's about the managers, about the supervisors, about somebody else in the company. It's about the company as a whole. And I cannot tolerate individuals with that type of mentality in the work environment. If you're miserable and you don't like it, leave. And a lot of times when you have this groupthink in the work environment, because we have these psychic prison issues, you have a lot of negative cultures, and the negative culture can spread like a disease in a work environment. And I've seen environments as a consultant where I would have one portion of the workforce in this particular organization, positive, upbeat, happy, positive culture, ready to go get them. Then I would have the negative employees on the other side who were just so miserable and so annoying. I call them the negative nannies or the negative Nancys, where everything they say, everything they do is just negative, negative, negative. They never see the good in anything. If someone does do something good, they find something negative to say or make an issue about it. Leading, and what happens when you have all this negativity, you end up finding a lot of employees who turn bitter. I experienced something recently with a woman in the work environment who's just so bitter. And she's just bitter until she thinks that in order for her to survive in the work environment, she has to be the bitch. And she thinks that's what she has to be. And what's sad about it is because nobody likes her. And she doesn't understand that her negativity and the bitterness is just so overwhelmingly annoying and disgusting and pathetic. I said to myself one day, you know, when I was driving home, I said, why do you even bother to get up and come here every day if you're so bitter and angry and miserable? And it's just her presence alone is so much negativity in her, around her, until it just makes your skin crawl. And when you're a consultant and you go into organizations and you're consulting, and, you know, you have conversations with the VPs, the owners of the company, the managers, the regular staff level office workers. And it's amazing because sometimes you can see there's so much chaos and so much hell going on there. And this organization is saying to me, I don't understand why we can't do better than what we're doing. And, you know, after I go through my evaluations, my assessments, if I have to conduct an investigation, you know, 96.9% of the time, I'll say, okay, 8% of the time, the organization is crashing and burning because of the employees, because of the psychic prisons, because of the negativity, because of the crap that goes on there. When you get that bitter employee who gets stuck, they get stuck on a page of bitterness, and I talk about this with Fabulously 50 Women of Color, they get stuck on that page. And something happens to them either in their personal lives or at the job, and they get stuck. Whatever happens can be so traumatic for them that it affects them to such a degree until they become the workplace, the bitter people of the work environment. That's the best way I can explain them. And they walk around like schleppwrocks. And wherever they go, they bring the negativity and the bitterness with them. They never see any good in growth and expansion and change. If you gave them $1,000 on a silver platter, they'd find something to groan and be bitter about it. And the key thing is, guys, when you're in the work environment, you're dealing with people like this, like the bitter employee, distance yourself from that individual because you don't want it to affect you. You don't want that negativity in your circle, because it can and will affect you psychologically, emotionally, physically, especially, and socially. So you want to, create that distance, put a barrier there. What I like to do with individuals when they come to me with the negativity, the bitter, the office politics, all the other nonsense that goes on in the work environment, I tell them, listen, I will work with anyone. I am a team player. I'm not a stranger to hard work, and I will work very hard for you. But one thing you must understand about Dr. C, I don't play games in the work environment. I don't do the bitter employee thing. I don't want to hear the negativity that you're placing on everyone's tabletop. And you have to remember, someone can only place something on your table if you allow them to. And the very first thing, my reaction is like, look, time out. I don't want to hear it. Now, if you want to talk to me about a work-related issue or problem that we need to solve, then let's do that. But don't you dare come to me and say, oh, your supervisor, he's a complete fizz. Because I don't want to hear that negativity. And if what you're saying to me is true, then let me find it out for myself. So when you're in the work environment, gang, and especially if you're new or you're old or whatever, older employee, I don't mean age-wise, I mean you've been there for a period of time, longevity in the job. I should be saying, distance yourself and keep yourself in such a position where you're not seen as being part of that negative Nancy clique or someone that hangs up with the bitter employee, the schlep rock of the organization who always wants to complain about everything. We all know that you're going to deal with issues in the work environment. You're going to deal with racism. One situation I dealt with involved a white woman who believed because she was white, she should be in a managerial level position, even though she didn't have the knowledge, skills, abilities, common sense, or critical thinking. But it was her white privilege and her white privilege alone that made her think that I should be the manager, not this black lady. And she sent out with a vendetta. Any which way she could possibly try, she tried to make this new black supervisor's life a living hell. And what was so sad about it is that this employee was so bitter. She was so angry and so mad that how dare you put this black woman over me as my supervisor when I'm a white woman who's older than she is. And this woman actually believed that because of her white skin that she had a right to be given the supervisory level position. Never ever thought for 2 seconds that she wasn't qualified. So, you know, you deal with that. You see the racism, you see the white privilege issues, you see the crabs in the barrel. There's nothing more annoying to see the crabs in the barrel. You know how crabs are when they're in the barrel. If one tries to climb up and crawl out of the barrel, what happens? The others pull them back down to keep them in there with them. You can be in the work environment and you can be someone who's a high achiever. That's just who you are in your makeup. You like getting things done, reaching for the stars, and moving ahead. And sometimes you run into those individuals who we label as crabs who don't want you to get ahead, so they grab you when they think you're at that point and they try and pull you down, whether it's through work sabotage, the negative grapevine, the gossip, office politics, the negativity. You have to be at all times on your job, guys, up on your toes. You have to cross your T's and double-check them, dot your I's and double-check them. What happens, you know, and it's not just with the crabs in the barrel. We see issues of colorism in the work environment. I've seen so much colorism in the work environment, and if I ever get a chance to come up for good air and I have the time, I'm going to finish this book on colorism, which is really, really phenomenal because I'm looking at colorism from a different perspective in the work environment and in life in general, relationships across the board. But here's the thing, gang. When you walk into a work environment and you see colorism, now remember, colorism can be interracial, where it could be like a white person against a black or black against white, and intraracial when it's among people belonging to the same race, black on black, Latino on Latino. So you see all of this, all of these issues that are taking place. And remember, well, this stuff relates back to the psychic pigments because these individuals are caught up and trapped in the way that they're thinking. Their appearance, how they see their appearances, reality, and knowledge for them is sometimes disturbing. started and floored. So when we start talking about the psychic prison, when we look at the crabs in the barrel, for example, I call it the crabs in the barrel syndrome. We see other employees trying to sabotage and bring you down. They're caught in that psychic prison. But they believe, okay, I'm stuck here in this dead-end job. I'm never going anywhere. Why should I sit here and be happy to see Jane Doe excel and move ahead? I'm going to pull her down and keep her right here with me. Misery loves company. It's the same thing when you're looking at racism and privilege and white privilege, where I told you the white woman believed because she was white, she should have been the manager or supervisor and not the black woman. In her mind, what happened for her, the appearances, reality, and knowledge for this woman was so distorted and flawed. She was living in an era of time in her mindset. She'd become so trapped in thinking that the only way to function in the work environment where it's going to be good and I'm going to be successful and be okay is if I see a white person as my supervisor or I am. And let me tell you, let me share an example with you with that about race and everything. A couple weeks ago, I went to a meeting. There were approximately, let me look at my count. There are 8 people in the room. 7 black people and 1 white woman. Out of the people in the room, there were with doctorate degrees. There are approximately 4 of us with doctorate degrees. The white woman had a doctorate degree. Well, the black woman, who was from human resources, walked into the room with folders. And this is where you have to note your own bias issues. And a lot of people don't see that. And they become so institutionalized that they don't understand and realize when they are treating people of color disparately, where they think at times, and I've seen this in the work environment so many times, if you're a person of color, especially a black woman, where they have a problem giving you your props and your titles. So let me tell you what happened. This is a very heavy-set black woman, natural hair, walks into the room, and she has folders in her arms, and she looks at the folders and she calls off names. She addressed the white woman as Dr. So-and-so. She then proceeds to go through the rest of the remaining 7 employees in the room. Now remember, out of those 7 employees, the other 3 of us, 3 of us were black, were, you know, black and mixed race, and Latino, who held doctorate degrees. But what she did was she addressed all of the black people by their first names. And I stopped and I said, wait a freaking minute. This woman didn't even realize what she did. Why? Because she couldn't see her own biases. The psychic prison she created for herself is the belief that, okay, if this is a white woman here, I consider her to be above these black individuals, regardless of the fact that they all have doctorate degrees. I will address this white woman as doctor, but these black PhDs, I will just address them by their first name. Does anybody see anything wrong with that? Call me, let me know, 914-338-1308. I found it appalling. I found it shocking. And what makes it so sad is that she didn't get it. Then, you know, in another situation where a white woman felt that the only way she could relate to a predominantly black group of people in the audience was what I consider buffoonery and clowning around and joking. And what I found so disturbing is that every black person in that room, except yours truly, they were hee-hee and ha-haing and grinning. I'm saying this is complete, utter annoyance. And I think what happens, everybody, is that when you are into research and reading and working with race, color, diversity, and colorism, you become more enlightened and you see through a lot of issues that other people normally would not see. And what I'm seeing more and more, and I've noticed more and more, which I find most disturbing, is when you go into a work environment, and we know we're going to deal with racism in the work environment. We know it's going to happen. We're not expecting it, but it does exist. But what really gets my goat and really ticks me off is when I see black people in a work environment trying to tear each other down and running to a white person and saying, look what I did. I tore Jane Doe down. And the white person is laughing not with them but at them and how pathetic that they are. Experienced something like that a couple weeks ago. So what we need to look at, and I'm not saying that because we're all people of color, we have to go into the work environment and form this coalition of, you know, we're black and we're sticking together. No, I'm not saying that. What I am saying is that when you go into the work environment, and we know that, especially in the Maryland area, we know that there's a lot of issues with racism here. Anyone that says it's not is lying to you. But when I see black people in the work environment intentionally being hateful, mean, nasty, spiteful toward each other, just because. Someone said to me a couple weeks ago, you dress so professional all the time. You're always in your pearls, your heels. I love pearls. And for me, I'm just a professional person. If I'm in the work environment, I am going to be dressed unless I'm cleaning my office and you'll see me in jeans and a t-shirt. And I said to this individual, you know, it was a guy, and I said, this is who I am. I'm not going to change or dress down to accommodate other people, nor do I believe that I have to dress down to fit in with the individuals. If they want to come to work looking like they're going to a softball game or they're going to clean someone's toilet bowl, that is totally on them. But what you have to remember is that people in this society, which is unfortunate, gauge you by the way you dress and how you carry yourself. In the work environment, if you have Jane Doe who comes in three-piece suits every day and you choose to wear jeans and a t-shirt, then why do you have an issue with her wearing the suit is my question, when she could care less about you wearing the jeans. There's so many issues. There's so many so much pettiness, envy, and OPPS in the work environment. So what you need to do is remember that any environment you go to, any job you go to, it's not going to be perfect. It's not going to be peachy creamy. But I think, and you guys tell me if you think I'm wrong, that at some point in time, you know, the crap has to stop. When you start looking at a lot of the issues why so many local government agencies and cities and states across this country have so many problems and issues, it's because the bulk of the time the people there are just with the petty nonsense. Focus in on your job and get your work done. You run into the bullies in the work environment who think it's okay to bring street business, and that means a street attitude, into a professional work environment, and it is not. I have zero tolerance for that. I will not tolerate a bully in the work environment because I will put you in check, nor will I tolerate that nonsense, that street, what I call ghetto nonsense, in the work environment. And I blame supervisors and managers who tolerate employees who do this. As one manager said to me a couple of years ago, he was afraid to speak to a couple of black girls in the work environment whose behavior was off the charts. And he said that as a white male, he feared speaking to them because they would deem it or consider him being a racist. Now, I don't know whether this guy was a racist or not, I could care less, but at the bottom line, I explained to him, and I'll say it to you guys, as a supervisor or manager in a work environment, you have to have the common sense, the guts, the know-how, the finesse, the leadership ability, and know how to manage people, especially when you're dealing with difficult behavior in the work environment. You have to understand how to manage that. You have to understand and recognize when it's a bully in the work environment who could potentially become dangerous because they're so angry and they're so violent. One thing that I noted when they had the shootings down in Virginia last week, one of the doctors on one of the MSNBC shows noted that, how did she say it? She said that people with mental illness in the work environment are not the ones who are going to go around and act angry and be violent. That's just bad behavior. Those are her words, and I cannot remember her name. So I think it's important to understand in the work environment when you're dealing with, you know, the crabs in the barrel people, the pettiness, the bullies, they want to bring street attitudes and negativity into the work environment. You as an employee, you do not have to tolerate that. You take it to your supervisor, and then you take it to HR, and you demand that they address it. Because in light of the fact that we see so many times in this society where there's so many murders and injuries and shootings and whatever, stabbings in at the workplace, you can never take a chance, and you can never say to another employee, oh, I don't think John Doe is dangerous. You have to be able to recognize the signs. You have to know when you need to draw the line in the sand, when you need to have come to Jesus with the employee. And you have to consider, okay, if this animosity here or this anger is to such a degree that this individual will jump in another one's face, what do you think would happen the next time around? If they're in a professional environment and they cannot control themselves to that to such a degree that they just explode and go ballistic. So, you know, employees, understand you have rights in the work environment. You do not have to tolerate bullying. You don't have to tolerate someone trying to intimidate you, sexually harass you, torment you, treat you disparately because of your race or the color of your skin. You know, it's all about equality and pay. One of my goals in developing some new programs, the college that I'm at, is to help employees understand what their rights are in the working place. Because, you know, when employees go to those trainings that they give you, half of the time those trainings are not thorough enough, or they don't offer enough training. I cannot tell you how many times I have noted where they never mention colorism in the workplace as being an EEOC issue. They'll talk about everything else from sexual harassment. That's what you hear. But employees need to know about colorism. They need to know that it's a violation of Title VII. They need to know that the employer should include colorism in their workplace training. And for those of you out here who are employees, if your employer is not or has not included the discussion of colorism and explaining what it is and all those protected areas under the Title VII, then maybe you should go to the EEOC's website and just read up on them or talk to your employee and say, why don't we have training here on colorism? But what I have found out over the years, and my notes are so thick on all of this stuff, is that what I've noticed a lot is that employers are often very uncomfortable talking about race and color in the work environment. Not only that, I've noticed that the bulk of HR professionals are not even well-versed in colorism to understand it to the magnitude of how it is a violation of Title VII because they don't understand what colorism is. There are a lot of people who are not people of color who don't believe that colorism exists. Colorism in the workplace? Are you freaking kidding me? No way. How could two black people who are two different skin colors not like each other because one skin is light and one is dark? And my response to that, you know, could possibly be, well, let's take it a step further. Where did this originate from? Where did the fact that someone possessing darker skin color is seen as less valuable and less worthy as someone possessing lighter skin color and more Eurocentric type phenotypes, meaning hair, nose, lips, and eyes. So it's important to understand all of this because it boils down in the end to the emotional intelligence. I remember years ago I worked at a college, and one of the trainings that we went through was an emotional intelligence lens. And that emotional intelligence training, basically, it went through and it talked about cultures, ethnicities, race, color, sexual orientation, talked about religious belief. And I found the training to be so rewarding. I wish I could have a copy of it to this day. But at the end of the day, when we see what is happening in the workplace, when we see these psychic prisons existing, and we don't see the issues being addressed in the manner in which they should, I blame the employer. I blame the director of HR. I blame the person in charge of training. Because absent them providing the employees with the training, a lot of people don't know. I've heard people think it's okay to say to another person in the work environment, oh, you yellow monkey, are you black so-and-so? And the sad part of it is that a lot of times when it comes to dealing especially with racism and colorism in the work environment, when we see or we understand the fear of employees, especially when they're not people of color, to address it in a training. And I think they fear it because they're afraid that it's going to open up a can of worms. One, or number two, they just don't care to, But number three, they don't know how to. Number four, for them to try and imagine how people of color could treat each other disparately is something sometimes they can't comprehend. But they can and do comprehend and understand when it's white against black because of the color of their skin. That is interracial colorism. So all this stuff that we're talking about, you guys, it goes back into us talking about these psychic prisons, how people get caught up in their favorite ways of thinking. With colorism in the psychic prison, someone can just be like, I don't care. And their particular mindset, when they look at someone who's a darker complexion, the appearance of that person bothers them because the skin is so dark. Their reality for them is that dark is something I don't want to be around or see, or I don't like them just because they're dark. And their knowledge is affected greatly because they're I would just hate to say this word, but ignorance. They border on the line of ignorance and not understanding diversity and inclusion and treating people equally. One of the big issues one of my colleagues and I got into a heated debate about 3 months ago was talking about this thing with tolerance and diversity in the work environment. And I think it is wrong to use the word tolerance. I don't like the word in with regard to diversity and saying to someone, you know, you tolerate that black girl over there with the dark skin and the natural hair. You tolerate that Asian guy over there. And you tolerate the Indian man or the Muslim who's required to pray several times, you know, throughout the day. I don't want to be tolerated. I want to be respected in the work environment. Except me for as I am. When you throw that word tolerate in there, that's the trigger word for me, at least in my opinion. You know, you have other people out here who will totally disagree with me, which I could care less about. But think about it. How many of you guys out here want to be tolerated? Or work in an environment where someone has to tolerate you because they're told they better or they have to. Rather, I think it's more or less important to say, let's provide a training in which we explain to them the differences and encourage embracing people who are different for whatever reason. But that's a whole other show. So at the end of the day, guys, when you look around and you see issues in the work environment, these psychic prisons can be horrible. Have you ever had the loudmouth employee who you just like to take and slap her into the next day? Loud, belligerent, ignorant, uncouth, with just nonsense to such a degree sometimes. You're saying, oh my gosh, how did they get the job? I remember one instance also where a woman told me that she kept employees there in the work environment because she was afraid to fire them with the reaction of what they were going to do because they were black girls. And I remember her also saying, well, you know, they're so loud. The other girls in the office are so uncomfortable because they're loud. And that reminded me, remember, I think it was last week or the week before last, where a group of black women were kicked off a train allegedly because they were too loud. So here's my question to you. Is it the fact that there was insensitivity on the part of the people on the train or the employees who worked for the train? Was it an insensitivity to culture? Was it insensitivity to just women having a good time? Was it racially biased? Were they trying to say, hey, black women, you know they're loud. You know they can be like that. You know, so when we're looking at these issues, there's so many. There's a plethora of issues we can look at with these psychic prisons in the work environment, but a lot of them, sometimes do deal with race and color and culture. I've also noticed the inability, I've noticed this myself just over the past couple of weeks, when you are different, the lack of being able to embrace the diversity of people being different is one of the biggest problems I see in work environments. Meaning, if Jane Doe doesn't look like them, dress like them, speak like them, then, oh my gosh, she's so different. But you know what? He or she may be different in a good way, in a positive light. What we need to see more of, I think, to get rid of these psychic prisons in the work environment is we need to educate our workforce. To teach them to think out of the box, stop trying to categorize people and put them in boxes because you think they belong to a certain race, ethnicity, or color. A racial group, I'm sorry. We need to focus more in saying, okay, let's provide this quality training for employees, at least every year, where they go through serious training on understanding and embracing diversity, on understanding what racism looks like in the workplace. There's an institution, I can tell you it's so funny, where you see the white employees walk around and don't speak to the black employees. When they see more black employees being hired, they get upset. They get antsy. And I've been around a long time, guys. And for me, when I see this in the work environment, and I see a lot of foolishness, nonsense, pettiness, racism, colorism, crabs in the barrel, I see the loud, ghetto, ignorant employee, I see the poor hygiene employees. You know, you see it all. And a friend of mine the other day, we ended up into a heated debate again because you guys know we love to do this stuff. And in the end, it's funny because we all sometimes don't even see each other's, the other person's viewpoint more so than ours by the end. But she made a comment, and I just said it to you guys, and I hope it triggered you. I hope that you were ticked off when I just said it. But she said to me, I don't want to work around no ghetto people. And I said to her, well, what is ghetto? Define ghetto. She could not do it. She attempted several times, and I caught her on each point she was trying to make. My point, gang, that I'm making is that in the work environment, I don't want to see any black woman labeled as being ghetto. You know, there's so many negative stereotypes out there about black people in the work environment. We're lazy, loud, the angry black woman, the mean-spirited black woman, the crabs in the barrel black woman, the black woman who's jealous of the lighter-skinned woman. You know, all these stereotypes, you know, they're so pathetic and they're so annoying, but what makes it worse is when you see them in the millennium, in 2015, and we're almost near the end of this year soon, we're still seeing this crap go on in the work environment. We have to go there and deal with employees who are so pathetically couth, who are not being trained. And all of this, and I will go up and argue against the biggest and baddest of them all, it all has to do with the training that is provided in the work environment. And I've seen so many training sessions that were as weak and withered, you know, as a rose left out after it's been snipped and left outside for a couple of days. I have seen training that is so shallow, incomplete, inconsistent, doesn't inform the employees, does not really focus on the real issues. And again, if you go to the EEOC's website and you just look at the statistical data, because, you know, it's all about the data, the numbers are what you need to look at. And you look at the number of claims that were filed for colorism between, I think it was 1992 up until, I think the data was 2013, 300% increase in colorism claims. 1 or 2 years in between there, you saw them drop down. But again, it goes back to if employers were providing quality training, if they were really focusing on diversity, and I'm talking about having trainings that are not sugarcoated. When I provide training sessions and workshops, I don't sugarcoat a thing. Because when you sugarcoat, you give people a false sense of reality. What happens when we see people getting caught in a false sense of reality? We see psychic prisons. Again, why? Because the reality is flawed and it's distorted. There are issues with appearances, reality, and knowledge. So at the end of the day, when all is said and done, when you're looking at the issues that you deal with in the work environment, you have rights as an employee. If there's someone offending you, harassing you, trying to bully you, you need to step up and address it. Let them know you're not going to tolerate it. Get it to your supervisor and report it. And then take it to HR. See, once human resources gets involved, and if it's an issue, they have to conduct an investigation. They have to. If you're involved in an issue in the work environment and they allow an employee who is angry and could be borderline violent, they don't do anything except just have a little conversation with that employee, you question, well, what's happening? What did you do? And what are you as the employer prepared to do to maintain and make sure that I'm safe in my work environment? If you're working in an environment where, you know, a lot of issues, people talk about mold and they talk about breathing problems. I mean, just a couple of months ago, we heard about the Legionnaires' disease up in New York. But if you're working in an environment, now you guys know I have severe allergies, suffered terribly year-round. And I have been able to survive these horrible allergies and not let them hold me back and make me sit home on disability the rest of my life because I've worked too hard. But what I do is when I go into an environment, I let the employer know my disability documentation, these are my allergy issues. I need to have this temperature in order for me to be able to stay in this environment. And for years, guys, I would go into work environments because, you know, I love working. And I couldn't stay there because the air quality, I need cool circulating air. I don't need air that comes on and goes off and then it waits until it gets warm again to come on again. I get deathly ill. So what I did, I made sure that I let employers know from the very beginning, these are the issues I'm dealing with my allergies. I'm asking you, if, especially if there's a thermostat in my office, that I be able to control the air quality and flow that I need to live. It's conducive to my health and environment. That's not asking for a lot. One year I worked at a VP at a bank where they actually brought in this indoor-outdoor air unit, hooked it into the main vent system, and I had a unit in my office that I had to keep on. And I was grateful that they did that because they made the accommodation for my disability. And what's so important to understand is that if you are a supervisor, you are an employee, whatever your status may be in the work environment, do not allow your ignorance of someone's medical condition to result in you refusing to make an accommodation because you're going to have a big issue there with the ADA. And don't let you not being able to understand the magnitude of someone's disability cloud or distort your perceptions or reality and let it be flawed. I remember one time someone said to me, well, just can't you turn a fan on? Nope, because the fan just takes that air in that room and blow it around. I need the air to be circulating and it has to be clean air circulating around. A fan just blows the warm air around the room. So my point here is that when you're working in the work environment, I've seen so many employees and supervisors and managers and business owners caught in psychic prisons to such a degree when it came to ADA issues they couldn't understand. And it was not for you to understand. It is for you to say, okay, here's the medical documentation. This person has a medical disability. Their doctor recommends what we need to do in the work environment to accommodate them so they can be able to come in and go to work every day and perform their job duties. So you make the accommodation if it's not going to cause a financial or hardship for the employer. Now, if you need to have a whole room renovated and it's going to cost them like $150,000, then that's going to be considered a hardship. But as a supervisor, as a coworker, as a manager, do not allow your ignorance of someone's disability to make comments or refuse someone's request for an accommodation. People get caught in psychic prisons all of the time. I'm not going to make this change. I'm not going to make this accommodation because I don't think it's necessary. I don't think this person really needs it. Getting caught, you're trapping yourself in that psychic prison. And favorite ways of thinking can confine you and trap you in a way where in your mind you begin to think that it's okay for you to keep thinking along the lines that you're thinking on, and it's not. Think about it, gang. When you look at the data, the EEOC's website, when you look at the number of lawsuits filed, we're living in an era where, unfortunately, we're still seeing a lot of racism happening in the work environment. I remember, I think his name was Rep. Clemson, I can't remember his name from, and the state he's from, can't remember to be correct. correct, but I remember he made a comment, and he said, we see so many issues involving racism in the work environment, because sometimes the people in human resources get in there and they don't let other people get in who may be qualified. Oh, you know, I live in the state of Maryland, and I will tell you, I've seen a lot of racism here. I have seen, especially black people in the work environment, treated disparately because they are black. I have also noted often too many times that when you start conducting investigations or digging really deep, you find out that people start saying things to you that are so absolutely out of this world, unbelievable, mind-blowing. So as an employee, as an employer, as a manager, supervisor, whatever your position may be, you go somewhere, you earn a paycheck, understand that when you're dealing with the psychic prisons in the work environment, you're dealing with employees who are caught in psychic prisons, it's important to be able to recognize that and put strategies and maneuvers together to help overcome it. If you're dealing with a lot of conflict, you have employees who don't get along, they don't like each other, they argue, somebody needs to go. It's not going to be a constant back and forth thing. Zero tolerance. You know, and before I get to being thrown under the bus, let me tell you what Jack Welch wrote about one time in one of his books. I'm not a big fan of Jack Welch, but I do like what he talked about, the 20-70-10 rule. I'm a big believer in that. So in the work environment, you have those employees who come in, they work their behinds off, they're good at what they do, they arrive to work on time, they follow the company policies. Model employees, those are your shining stars, your top 20%. You keep them, they're keepers. Then in the next group, when you have the 20-70-10 rule, the middle 70% of your employees, the next 70% of your employees at middle group, they are the ones who are okay, they're good. But with coaching and the right training and professional development, they can join the ranks of the top 20%. So you keep the ones, you keep them, and you work with them, and you help them grow and join those rank, the rank. Then you have the bottom 10%. And this is what I think about the bottom 10%. Those bottom 10% of the employees are the ones who just come here just because of the paycheck. They're often the bitter employees. They're the angry employee. They're the negative nannies and negative Nancys. They're bitter. They want to come into work and argue. All kinds of drama with them. And they really don't like being there. And you know they're not really going to stay. They're just there for a paycheck. Those are the people you get rid of. Get rid of them. You're trying to build an organization to be sustainable, to really grow and expand, and those people in that bottom 10% are the ones who you know, with or without the training, they're not going to make the grade. The bottom 10% has to go. And you focus on your middle 70%, that group, of turning them into shining stars to join the ranks of the 20%. Does that make sense to you guys? Think about it. I mean, really think about it. And you can take those numbers and flip them around any way you want to. But I think at the end of the day, when we start looking at workplaces and these psychic prisons and how people get trapped in their favorite ways of thinking and they confine themselves in with a false sense of security, their reality is often flawed and distorted. They can't see the forest for the trees. The ones who resist change at all costs. You know, psychic prisons can cause so many businesses, organizations, and agencies to crash and burn. And once you have a reputation for being incompetent and a screw-up, it takes a long time to beat that down and get rid of it. So if you know that there was a time period when your organization or your business started to spiral downhill, and those employees who were there, supervisors, managers, whoever they may be, or part of the reason for the downward spiral of your business, your organization, when you realize it and you're trying to rebuild and improve, those employees are the ones who I'm referring to in that bottom 10%. Those are the ones you just need to get rid of. If they're not performing, they cannot do the job, and because of their incompetency and inability to perform at the level that is expected, and their failure to perform at that level, despite training, is not made a difference. Coaching, PIPs, professional improvement plans, they've got to go because they can be the detriment of your company. Now, if you've exhausted all possibilities of training, if that individual just can't get it, that psychic prison is so entrenched in that psychic prison that you know they'll never, ever break free, where they actually represent the cave dweller, then you need to make a decision. 9 times out of 10, you often find those employees in that 10% area, and some in the 70, and some in the 22, who like to throw people under that bus. Have you guys ever been thrown under the bus? I remember years ago, I was thrown under the bus. And I don't remember what it was for either. I was much younger. And I remember my reaction was like, oh, hell no. You're throwing me under the bus, and I have nothing to do with this. But I've always been the type of person, I will stand my ground and speak firmly on, especially issues that are just wrong. If you're in the work environment and you see that because of someone not doing what they should be doing, the company is losing you, getting ready to fall, you know, crash and burn, and you as the owner or the manager, the supervisor, you don't get it because you're caught in a psychic prison where you don't want to accept the reality of the appearance and the reality and the knowledge in front of you, then that psychic prison that you're trapped in can lead to your downfall and the destruction of your business. So understand. So for those of us who've been thrown under the bus, I wouldn't expect you to turn around and try and throw someone under the bus because you know how it feels. But cross your T's, double-check them, dot your I's, and double-check them. When you're on your job, you know, maintain professionalism. If you're dealing with confidentiality, keep it confidential. Don't play games. Don't do the click thing. Don't go around trying to set people up to terminate them. There's one employee I know of at a company, and she walks around bragging that she's going to take someone's job and it's in the mix to get him out because she deserves to have the position. She's someone in my bottom 10%, I would fire her. I don't care if she's been there for 25, 30 years. You don't need to see that in the work environment. And I think when employers realize that they need to set these standards of zero tolerance for the nonsense, now, you don't mind employees laughing and talking and having a good time. But when you start seeing this negativity with these psychic prisons can literally destroy your business. It can destroy careers and opportunities and futures. So especially in the education sector, psychic prisons have no place there if you're an educator. Should not be there. But unfortunately, we don't live in a perfect society. We don't live in a perfect world. So you've got to deal with a couple of issues and types of people, all types of people in the work environment. The key is for you as the employee to understand what your rights are, to keep yourself focused and driven, and, you know, zero tolerance and take action if somebody approaches you with the drama, the nonsense in the work environment. See, people treat you the way they do because you allow it. If you do not allow someone to treat you in the manner that they think that they're going to treat you, it's not going to happen. Because you're going to stand your ground and you're going to let them know, listen, I am so not the one. And you need to understand that. I remember a couple of years ago I had to tell someone, don't get it twisted. Do not think that I can't take Dr. Colbert and put her in a sidebar, handle this situation, and I don't mean violently or physically or anything, I don't mean that. Pick Dr. Colbert back up when I'm done because flesh rolls up. And people have limitations. When we go into our work environment, you know that you're not going to agree with everyone. You know there's going to be a little maybe conflict here and there. But you agree to disagree and walk away. Work together. What can we do to work together to make this productive for the good of the team, of the environment? Every morning when we all wake up, we put on our caps and our jerseys for the team that we're playing on, and we go in there and we play. Well, I don't mean play, but we go to work for your employer. Not as if 50% of you are putting on a cap and a jersey for a different team and going into an environment where there's another team and you're opposing forces. Of course not. So if you are supposed to be part of the team, then act it. When you see the fifth grade mentality behavior, when you see the negativity, where you see the refusal to work with others because of the color of their skin, then that's pathetic. when you see employees who can no longer be of service to your company, then you need to make a decision, even if they're a good employee, but they've just not what you need them to be to keep your organization or your staff, then you have to say to them, it's been nice, but you've got to go. There are oftentimes in the work environment where supervisors see a lot of crap going on and they turn their heads. Or are they caught in a psychic prison? They could be. The psychic prison of refusing to see the reality of the situation, to understand that the appearance is not what it always seems to be, and that the knowledge issue is something that needs to be addressed. So when we start talking about psychic prisons, they include so many different issues in the work environment. The key I want everyone to hear tonight and remember is that as an employee, you have rights. There was an issue a couple years ago where the EEOC changed where they allowed managers and supervisors to actually be sued for issues in the work environment, be sued personally. Not as part of the company, but where you could sue them personally. And I think that was a good move. I think it was a smart move. So at the end of the day, guys, when you're dealing with psychic prisons, people caught and trapped in psychic prisons in the work environment, you'll know them because of the negativity they bring into the environment. You know, they can walk into the room and the whole energy level just changes. It's amazing. You know, you have to make the choice of decision for yourself. And the reason why I'm talking about this, gang, is because I get so concerned when I hear employees who are really good employees who can really make the difference for an organization being stressed and frustrated because of the psychic prison mentality that exists in their work environment. When you see groupthink to such a degree that groupthink and the cliques and the office politics are a serious issue. When you see those bitter employees who something happened in their lives and they got stuck on the page of bitterness there in your work environment wrecking havoc and just coming in every day just to raise hell, get rid of them. Those are the people in your bottom 10%. Get rid of them. Get them out. I have zero tolerance for that. We live in a society where it's very competitive when it comes to business. We live in a society where it's so important for especially our young people to get a quality education, learn good skills. So what we need to focus in on is making sure that, you know, if we're educators, if we're just business people, if we're secretaries, whatever positions we're in our work environment, that we're putting our best foot forward, that we understand and recognize what psychic prisons are and how they can affect the entire workforce. It's like a plague sometimes. It can just spread throughout the entire workforce. And you end up seeing then a culture of the organization turn from one of being to being one of ugh. Nobody wants to go to work in ugh environments. I know I don't. I will not. So at the end of the day, how do you deal with the psychic prison issues in the workplace when people throw you under the bus? You have to think smarter than them, be on top of your game, double cross the T's, double cross the I's, check them thoroughly. Be a professional. Issues arise in the work environment where you feel that you've been slighted. If it's your supervisor, another employee, you address the issues, you go to human resources. But don't allow yourself to be caught up in an argument with a coworker because you could end up losing your job. Don't lower yourself or your standards to fit in with them. And for those employees who are the bitter ones in the work environment, if you're so doggone bitter and angry every day when you go to work, maybe you need to look for moving on to something different. Because I believe, like Jack Welch says, that bottom 10%, get rid of them. And that's just the bottom line. At the end of the day, that's it. Years ago, when I actually gave my presentation, gang, I talked about my 4D approach to resolving conflict, and we don't have time to go into it tonight, so I'll have to go into it next week or the next show when we're talking about workplace issues again. But conflict in the work environment. Sorry, gang, I hit the mic again. Can be addressed and dealt with. It's how we deal with it, how we address it, and how we choose to make sure we focus on the right issues. Psychic prisons can be really detrimental to not just the emotional well-being of the person who's being victimized, but the entire workforce that you're working with. So as supervisors, as managers, know the difference. And if you're an employee who's working in an organization where you see the culture is so negative, where you see that the psychic prison mentality has, like, engulfed the entire firm and the culture is such that it's unbearable, then maybe I think it's time you need to move on. Why would you stay there and you're miserable every day and you're stressed out and you end up with heart disease and high blood pressure and all kind of health issues and stress, all because of the drama that you're putting up within the work environment? If your employer doesn't recognize and realize the value that you bring to the organization, and if you're dealing with a lot of nonsense, it's time for you to pack your bags and move on. But be smart. Be smart about your next move. Do your homework on the company. Thoroughly research them. Know what you're getting into. And sometimes you can research. I mean, you still walk in and make a decision, and you still walk into all chaos and pandemonium. But at the end of the day, when all is said and done, it's just important to understand that psychic prisons are can be detrimental. They can affect you psychologically, emotionally, physically, and socially. You understand what they look like in the work environment. For those of you who are putting up with those coworkers who want to come in and just keep hell going and be mean and nasty and evil, you have to address the issue and let them know, I don't want to be a part of this. It's just like me, gang, when someone approaches me in the work environment and they're telling me, oh, let me tell you about this, I'm like, nope, don't want to hear it. Do not bring that negativity into my presence. I am not here to be friends with you. I'm not here to win brownie points with you. I'm here to do a job, to do it exceptionally well, and to earn a paycheck, and have the right to work in a safe environment and with environmental conditions that are conducive to my health. Your health. And you don't have to be, it's not going to be something where you're going to have everything you want. We'll never have that in any environment. You'll never get your way. But my point to you guys is that know what a psychic prison is. Know when you see it, realize it, recognize it, and don't be afraid to say to a group with whom you may clicked with or belong to, no, I disagree with you. It's okay to break that cohesiveness. Sometimes when we're dealing with the groupthink in the psychic prisons, people are afraid to break free and speak up, to the group leader and say, no, I'm sorry, but you're wrong. I just don't agree with you there. Because they don't want to seem like the outsider, and they don't want to be the person responsible for breaking that cohesiveness. It's okay. Think about you, your emotional health, your emotional intelligence, your mental health, your physical health. You don't want to be involved in an environment or work in an environment that is so stressful. I remember someone told me years ago that every morning, and I was like this years ago too for me, when I worked at the bank, I hated that job more than I hated that job so much. And that was the only job I ever had in my entire life that I can tell you I had two of them. I literally hated where you just get queasy in the stomach, just getting up and driving there, pulling into the parking lot. I was like, oh, God. I hated the building, didn't like the way it looked, didn't like any of the people. The culture was just a pathetic, sickening, racist culture. And when I worked at another college, there was a lot of racism. So sometimes you ask yourself, is it that you don't like the work environment because of the racism? Is it the culture to such a degree? Is it the work, the performance, the job duties that you perform? Is it one or two coworkers? Is it the pay? Is it the location? There's so many areas, there's so many issues, but it's important for you to understand that, as I said to you guys a couple weeks ago on the show, Living Your Dash in Style, it's your life. Be happy. If you're in a work environment and you're just that so doggone miserable that you can't stand it, get out. Save your sanity, your peace of mind, your psychological, emotional, physical, and social well-being. It's not worth it. You either deal with the issues if there's such a degree that you want to stay there and that you know they could be corrected or you believe they can, take it to HR. You are as an employee, you have a right. And if you go to your employer and you report an issue and your employer retaliates and starts harassing you, lawyer. Go to the EEOC if it's one of the seven, if it's one of the areas protected under Title VII. But know that as an employee, you have rights. That there's certain situations and scenarios that you do not have to tolerate in your work environment. And you be firm and no nonsense and don't ever say, oh, it's okay. No, it's not okay, because you know you're not okay with it. You speak on it, address the issues, and you with the expectations that they're going to address it and deal with the issues or the problems, and then you move on. I'm a type of person, guys, I love going to work. I'm just like, I love being busy, I love creating, I love developing, and I'm also the background person. I like to do the work behind the scenes. When I'm working, I am the type of person where I don't do the click thing. I kind of like stay to myself, but I work hard. If you know that you're an individual, you don't want to work hard. You get written up, you get fired, you're not performing your job duties right. What are you going to say? But if you're doing your job right, performing well, and you know from your supervisor's emails and discussions that they've said to you, oh, you're doing so great, document everything. That is something you must learn to do as an employee. Document everything down. If you have a problem with your employer and you wait for 1 year and you deal with the same crap happening every other week and you never document it down, you never go to HR and file a complaint, but finally one day it hits you and you're at your boiling point and you've had enough and you flip and you're like, that's it, I'm going to HR and I'm filing a complaint because I can't put up with this any longer. If you haven't established a document at your paper trail, guess what? You screwed yourself. So you start documenting things down. If you put them in your cell phone to make a little diary, when you go home, keep a diary and write the issues down. On June 3rd at 4 o'clock in the afternoon, and you put down what happened in detail. Never be too busy to document. If it's an issue regarding an evaluation and your employer gives you an evaluation and you find that the evaluation is biased and it's not fair and there's a lot of issues with it, you write a response. You don't have to sign to accept it that day. You tell them, no, I'd like to write a response to it because I don't agree with what you put in here. If your employee gives you a bad evaluation, but they have never, ever called you in for a coaching session, if they've never talked to you and said to you, well, Jane Doe, you're not doing really well, I need you to improve in the following areas. If she told you verbally, you should take a pen and pad anytime your supervisor calls you into the office to talk about any issue. But if they give you a horrible evaluation, and prior to that evaluation, they have never, ever spoken to you about your performance and said, I'm putting a note in your file, if they've never said to you, oh, I had these concerns because you keep making these constant mistakes, and they turn around and give you an evaluation from hell that is so horrible you'll never get your increase or your raise or promotion, and they give you this slamming, damning evaluation, then you need to address that with your supervisor and human resources. You need to write a response logically after you calm down. You don't want to write it when you're a raging inferno. You calm down. You think logically. You take a couple of deep breaths, and you begin to tell your story without gaps. This is why I'm telling you it's important to document. You get a bad evaluation and you never documented anything and you say, oh, Donnie, when did that happen? Was that in June of last year? Or was that in July of this year? You haven't documented it, so it doesn't really exist. If you have a concern or an issue with that evaluation and you bring it to your supervisor or manager's attention, you write a response, well, this is not what happened, here's my evidence, and keep your evidence. If your supervisor sends you emails, and they're telling you did a great job, if he just writes it on a scrap of paper, if he tells you, document that stuff down. So in turn, when you do get that bad evaluation, you have evidence when you write your rebuttal or your response to say, well, hey, you know, for the past 10, 11, 12 months, you've been giving me nothing but kudos up to whatever. And all these emails tell me, great job, fantastic work, great work. And then you write an evaluation in which you give me all these low scores. There's something wrong with this situation. and address it. Don't be afraid to challenge. And, you know, logically, level-headed, this is not accurate. I'm sorry, I don't agree with this because, and here's my evidence to prove that. So my point, gang, is that if you don't have the evidence, if you haven't documented, you document everything. If you're a supervisor, if you had to speak to Jane Doe on June 3rd, for whatever reason, you document it down in your file that you keep of that employee. You know, June 3rd had to speak to Jane Doe about being late for the fifth time. If you as a manager, a supervisor, are failing to follow your company's progressive disciplinary policy, if you allow Jane Doe to come in late every day for 9 months straight, and then finally one day you're having a crisis and you get annoyed because Jane Doe came in late when you really needed her to be on time, and you suddenly up and fire her for violating the company policy, and you go to an unemployment hearing, and the unemployment rep hearing officer will ask you for a copy of your progressive disciplinary policy, and you hand it in, and they ask you for your notices, your notifications, your personnel write-ups on this employee when you gave her notice or him notice that they were violating the disciplinary policy by being late. You know, sometimes the first offense is a verbal warning. Second, it's written. Sometimes third, it could be termination. If you didn't follow your company's own, your own progressive disciplinary policy, and you fired the employee without any documentation other than saying, well, 9 times she was late, but you didn't follow the procedures. When you go to an unemployment hearing, guess what's going to happen? The employee is going to win, they're going to prevail, and they're going to get awarded their benefits. Now, if you document everything thoroughly, and if you say that this employee's performance is so horrible, what have you as a supervisor done to provide a personal improvement plan for them, a PIP? Have you sat down and coached them and said, okay, Jane Doe, John Doe, these are the areas, as we note in your evaluation, that you're weak in. So I put together this plan, and this is how we're going to proceed going forward. So for the next 3 to 6 months, we're going to monitor your employment. We're going to monitor how you perform these duties. We'll meet again. I'll give you feedback throughout this whole process and time period. And you work and establish, you know, little strategies and tools or whatever you need to do to help that employee improve. At the end of that little period you've given them, you know, probation or review period, you go back and look, but it shouldn't be that you meet with that employee that one time and say, okay, 6 months later, we're going to review this again. And you never, ever say anything or meet with that employee between that 6 months period, then shame on you. You know, so there are a lot of issues and areas. If an employee comes to you and they tell you they have a concern about an issue or something, you have to address it. You have to investigate if it's something that needs to be investigated. And you can't cover it up and sugarcoat it and say, oh, well, we just decided we're going to let it go because he or she didn't mean any harm. You never know what could happen. You take every precaution to protect yourself and, that, and, you know, of course, the employee. If you have a bad seed, get rid of them. If they're not trying to improve, if they're being office bully, a problem, they're not performing well, they're just causing total chaos and pandemonium in the work environment, then you need to make a decision. What are you going to do? Well, employees know your rights. When you start a new job and they give you the employee handbook, read it. You know how many times I've seen employees, I heard employees say to me, nah, Doc, I never read it. I just threw it in my bag and took it home. 4 to 5 to 6 months later, they're having all hell breaking loose in the work environment. And you say to them, well, what does your company policy say about A, B, C, or D? Oh, I don't know. Did you ever read it? No. Well, do you have it? I think I do. And they find it and they realize that what they thought was correct or the right way was wrong. And they don't have a leg to stand on. So when your employer gives you employee handbooks, company policy books, read them, familiarize yourself with your company's policies, attendance, your sick days, holidays, progressive disciplinary problems, write-ups, performance. Familiarize yourself with these in your work environment so you know exactly, you know, it's just like an education. I've been in education for almost 15 years now, a little bit longer, I think. And I am a stickler. When I develop an assignment for a student, I've done this my entire academic career. You develop a writing assignment or a research paper assignment for a student in a classroom. rather than me addressing, of course, the areas that you talk about in the assignment instructions, but I would like to know the criteria on which I'm being graded. How many points are you giving me for structure? How many points are you giving me for clarity? How many points are you giving me for research, for writing, for applying theories, for critical thinking, for analytical? I mean, so I attach a rubric to every assignment since the day I started teaching. I think I'm like the queen of rubrics. I must have like thousands of them. But guess what? Every class that I've ever taught in my entire life, every assignment. So if I'm teaching a 16-week course, on the day I hand out my syllabi to my students, guess what? My students receive, if they're going to say complete, 14 assignments in that course. Attached to the syllabus are those 14 assignments and the rubric to grade each assignment. So the students know what they're being graded on in advance. They can look at the rubric when they're completing the assignment to make sure that they have not only have they followed the instructions and responded adequately to the assignment, you know, questions or whatever it is, but they can then look at the rubric and see what they're being graded on. So it's like a no-brainer. At the end of the day, as to you who are employees of these psychic prisons in the work environment, it doesn't hurt to assess yourself. I am a stickler. I assess myself in all that I do. I've always done that. And I think that's why I'm a high achiever and I have standards that are set very high for myself, which I never, ever lower my standards. My expectations, if I set a timeline in place, if all goes well and I can do what I'm supposed to do, I complete projects 30, 60, 90 days in advance. Set up a system for yourself where you assess yourself, SWOT yourself. It's so important for you to understand psychic prisons, your rights as an employee, issues we deal with in the workplace, knowing that at the end of the day, when all is said and done, if you're dealing with a lot of drama in your work environment, if your supervisor is making your life a living nightmare, then you talk to them. If you know there's no way that your two personalities will ever be able to see eye to eye, it's time for you to pack your bags. C'est la vie. And, you know, ship out. Bottom line, guys, always know and remember that psychic prisons in the work environment, and I mean, I could really go more into detail, but I'm pressed for time, so I can't. But I think I may do a webinar in a couple of months on this. Normally, I give them as in-person workshops that are 2 days. And I go much deeper and more thorough, more explanations into everything where I talk about, you know, not just the surface areas that I just covered today, but I go in great detail, you know, about the bad employee, the bad behavior of employees, the negative people, the issues. I do it in great, great, great detail. So that's it. That's my take on psychic prisons for tonight. I hope it helped you. Hope it was worthwhile. Looking forward to next week. We should be back on track with our regular weekly shows again. Just a word to let everybody know, and I wanted to announce this, that our books, Live Life Beautiful, Affirmations for Girls of Color, is available for purchase on the website of Complexity Publishing. We also have our own website, Live Life Beautiful, I think it is book.com. And the other book, Living Life Fabulous at 50, Affirmations for Women of Color, is also available. The holidays are coming up soon, so if you want to get copies for the special woman, grandma, aunt, uncle, little girl, a teen, a preteen in your life, feel free to, you know, order them. With regard to the Journal of Colorism Studies, as I noted earlier, we'll hopefully get that issue out by the end of the year. Our next call for submissions will be coming out, I think, over this weekend. And I have to check back with the committee, but I think it's on race and color in higher education. I'm not sure. But looking forward and excited with that. Again, with the National Girls and Women of Color Council, we're still looking for members to join our task forces. We're expanding. We're growing. A lot of great things are happening. We received our 501c3 status, so we are officially a nonprofit. I am excited about that. Great things are happening for NGWCC. As I noted in the beginning of the show, we will be establishing the National Girls and Women of Color Scholarship Fund at one of the colleges. Maryland, and I'll give you more details and share that with you. But I think it's the scholarship is excellent because, as you know, our goal and our focus is working with girls and women of color and helping them reach higher ground in life. So at the end of the day, guys, it's good to be back. I've missed the show. A lot of stuff is going on. I'll be making a lot of good changes over the next couple of months. And I think that's the beauty of this, adapting to the change and, you know, just doing what we do. So thank you for tuning in, everyone. Have a wonderful holiday weekend. Have fun. Get rest. Be on time for work on Tuesday morning. And if you guys have any questions or if you'd like me to conduct a workshop on the Plato's Cave, because you guys, I don't know if you know or not, but I'm also an HR person, and specializing in diversity, race, and color issues in the work environment. If you'd like a workshop or a presentation, please feel free to reach out to me. I think it's at complexityradio.com, info at complexityradio, or producer at complexityradio.com. All right, guys, it's been nice. Thank you for tuning in. Have a good one. Good night, gang.
Thank you for joining us for Complexity Talk Radio, Complexity Live, with Dr. Donna Maria Colbreth. You may contact us at 866-829-0163. We are looking forward to your tuning in next Thursday at 8 p.m. Eastern Time. Until then, remember, dare to be different and dream in color. For Complexity Talk Radio, Complexity Live, this is Heidi S. Montross signing off. Good night, everyone.